Good afternoon, good morning, good everything to all of us. I'm excited to be here on our fourth Faith, Freedom and Feminism podcast recording. I am honored to be here with a new friend that I have met. She will introduce herself on our fourth episode of Faith and Feminism and Freedom. Karibu sana.
Asante sana.
It is such an honor to meet you.
Yes.
So we met and I just knew we had to have this conversation.
Okay.
Because your journey to leadership into within the church space has been very inspiring. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you so much. I think I'm also honored to be here and you're excited. My name is Archbishop Betty Onyango. Betty Onyango Fellowships in Africa and Israel in Ebe Church. Which is under some ecumenical organization, famous NCCK and OIC, that is Organization of Africa Instituted Churches.
All right.
Yes.
So thank you for that. Would you maybe give a brief history to how your journey to leadership has been? When did you know that you could be a leader?
Wow. Thank you so much. Maybe a brief history. And I think my potential of leadership was started long way before in primary school.
Mm-hmm.
So in primary school, I was a class prefect all through. Then in class 8, I'm a first 844 person.
Mm-hmm.
So in class 8, I became the head girl.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went to secondary school. From form 1, I was given the prefect of the Form 1 class, that the stream I was in.
Mm-hmm.
In Form 2, I was given the entertainment prefect.
Mm-hmm.
Then in Form 3, I became the dorm prefect. In Form 4, I became the school head girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so after that, I went to college. I did nursing. I'm a nurse by profession.
Mm-hmm.
So in nursing, I also saw some leadership.
Mm-hmm.
As I entered, I became the class representative.
Wow.
So I started my nursing in a certificate level.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went upgraded in diploma.
Mm-hmm.
Diploma, the same class representative followed me.
Mm-hmm.
So it has been on along. So when I went to do my PSN, that is bachelor's in nursing, I also found myself as the class representative, but that is in career level. But when I, in church, I started leadership before I got married.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a Sunday school teacher. So I did Sunday school. And then alongside doing my nursing, I started doing the distant learning in theology.
Mm-hmm.
So in OIC, they offered theology by extension.
Yes.
So I did theology by extension when I graduated. I was actually put in my church, appointed as and ordained as a young pastor.
Mm.
And I was the first female to be nominated as the young pastor because of the theological training that I had.
Uh-huh.
I was so naive.
Uh-huh.
And at that time, there were so many challenges.
Mm-hmm.
One, even the other women leaders who are now mature in age, the older women, could not recognize my leadership as pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this leader, a woman leader from my local area.
Mm-hmm.
When I came, whenever he could see me in any congregation meeting, could chase me and tell me, you see two.
Yeah.
Even you now, you think you are a pastor.
Wow.
So it was actually a bullying time.
Mm-hmm.
Until I went to my bishop one time and told my bishop, I don't want to be a pastor.
Mm.
The bullying was too much.
Mm.
And my bishop.
And this was from women and men? It
was women and more so elderly women.
Mm-hmm.
So when I told my bishop, I don't want to be a pastor, my bishop told me, no, I can change and maybe post you somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And I still said no. And in the next announcement, when there were transfers of leaders, I was actually transferred from where I was to another station. And then I ran away from church.
Oh,
yeah. The day I was to report, I didn't report. and I just left.
Mm.
And until 2 months later, I just saw Bishop's car next to my house.
Mm.
And it was like, wow.
Mm.
So I was afraid and I took the back door and ran away.
Yeah,
thank God my husband was at the house.
Mm-hmm.
So the husband is the one who met the bishop.
Mm-hmm.
And I told my husband, I want to see your wife.
Oh.
Your wife has run away.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a conversation because my husband had also encouraged me.
Yeah.
And it was like, me, I'm leaving church.
Yeah.
I was actually quitting church
mm-hmm.
because of the bullying I found within the women's circle.
Mm-hmm.
But then the two men, that is now my archbishop and my husband,
yeah,
did a lot of pastoring.
Mm-hmm.
And until now, my husband requested the bishop actually to remove me from being a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And I was removed.
Mm-hmm.
Then I continued with church.
Mm-hmm.
So as I continued with church, I could just find myself leading women. When things are not going right, I just find myself leading and telling them the direction, leading and telling them the direction. From there, then the women told me, we are not going to frustrate you.
Oh.
And can you just take the leadership?
Yeah.
Now it was the women going to the bishop to ask them that I take the leadership.
Yeah.
But I was hesitant and the bishop was also hesitant.
Mm-hmm.
So the first leadership that bishop now gave me from there was actually in the women desk.
Mm-hmm.
And that was at the national level.
Mm-hmm.
So I led together with the women leader. I was now her secretary.
Mm.
And the work went on well. Now I started being promoted from there.
Okay.
Then I was ordained as a reverend.
Mm-hmm.
And I served for long as a reverend.
Mm-hmm. In your, as you're telling the story, in your congregation, in your denomination, how easy is it for women to be ordained?
It's not very easy for a woman to be ordained.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, when I started leadership, actually I was alone.
Mm-hmm. Were you the first one?
I was the first one.
Within your whole denomination?
Within the whole denomination.
In the country.
Yes, but as we pulled in other women to go to theological school, at least when they were coming out, my bishop impressed
mm-hmm.
the ordination of women. And from the council now, was given a number not to ordain so many women. Now, that was in the year 2009.
Mm-hmm.
That is the year nine women were ordained.
Oh, 2009?
Yes.
Ah, okay.
And that was a big number, and women started understanding women in leadership.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to do a lot of work, because the questions among even the congregants and even other church leaders, you know, the church and even the Bible is patriarchy in nature.
Yes.
And now they were asking us questions. Mm-hmm. Can a woman go to the pulpit?
Wow.
And it forced me to read the Bible deeper and deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up with these passions
mm-hmm.
and told them, yes, a woman can go to the pulpit.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted me to convince them more. Mm-hmm. How can a woman take a leadership in a church space?
Mm-hmm.
And I told them, one, the space and the leadership in church for women and in church actually is for women.
Mm-hmm.
Mary just came in
mm-hmm.
and people are like, how? And I tell them, let us walk the journey.
Mm-hmm.
The angel, when we are talking about redemption,
mm-hmm.
when God wanted to redeem the world, the first person God to speak with was a woman,
yeah.
and that is Mary.
Yeah.
Go through, even in the death of Christ,
yes.
the first evangelists
mm.
are actually women
yeah.
who went to the tomb mm. and saw the empty tomb
yeah.
and went and spread the reason that the Lord has risen.
Mm.
So the first person to pronounce and even to proclaim the resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ is a woman. Mm. Then from that perspective, how can somebody come and say that women don't have a space?
Yeah.
While they're the first announcers, the first evangelist
yeah.
in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So from there, actually, men started thinking, and now we could negotiate more for women's space.
So you had your truth?
Yes.
And not just your truth, it is God's truth.
It is God's truth.
You had the God's truth, and so you put it in light. What is happening within the church system.
Mm.
And when those two are together, then they have no choice.
No choice but to follow. And there were a lot of revelation, how women even led the redemption. And it was not only in the Old Testament, in the New Testament. You go back in the Old Testament, you see Akina began. Rescuing the land. You see Akina Ruth, Akina Deborah. These are women in leadership.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, so how did you then, because not many people, even men, not many men are archbishops.
Yes, not many men are archbishops.
How did you get to that?
It is actually, I was, after being ordained as a reverend, I served. And this comes out, you know, with women. When you are being now appointed, they look at your track record. And they look at some of the virtues of which you impress.
Yeah.
And one key, you need to uphold integrity.
Yes.
Integrity speaks for you, whether somebody is seeing you or is not seeing you.
Yeah.
How do you handle financial issues? It comes on board, and that gives you an edge and a platform together with your academic qualification. Then when you are nominated, it is like, when I was nominated, first I was nominated to lead the church in Tanzania. Our Archbishop for Tanzania had just passed on to the glory. Then there was nobody. Then people, they sat the committee, the Council of Elders, and they said, can we have Mama Betty lead the church in Tanzania? And when they appointed me, there was no any other person. I didn't have a competitor. So I just went in, and my husband was really supporting, and he encouraged me. And when I went to Tanzania, Tanzania Church really impressed me, and it gave me the courage to keep on. The way I was received day one at the border, it even shocked me. The whole church had come to the border. Until at the migration, people were asking, who are we receiving? We are receiving our archbishop. So even the people who are working at the migration knew me. Even when I come with my passport for stamping, they were like, Bishop Umekuja tu ombe, and they could give me a space. And naturally, I got a VIP, so every time I could go through the VIP at the border. So it gave me an encouragement to move on.
Yeah.
Yes.
So so from Tanzania, and then?
From Tanzania, I was then chained to come and lead the church. The church had grown so big, so Archbishop wanted my overall leader, now wanted somebody to lead Kenya, as he stands now to be the overall leader of the church, because we have another Archbishop in Tanzania and another one in Kenya. So the person in Kenya was actually the topmost leader, but now he wanted somebody to lead. So I was again moved from Tanzania to Kenya.
Okay.
And that's how I came to Kenya.
All right. And then so then you led Kenya as a bishop or an?
As an archbishop.
All right.
So we have an archbishop in Tanzania, we have an archbishop in Uganda, we have an archbishop in Rwanda, and we have an archbishop here now in Kenya. And then we have our overall archbishop whom we report to.
Yeah. Thanks. So what the conversation we are having here is the importance of women voices and women's power in churches.
Yeah.
What would you say is the importance of women's voices in church leadership? And how have you found your voice within your church space?
To the voice of women is so unique, and it is important in any organization, and therefore the church space cannot miss the voice of a woman.
Yeah.
Why? You look at it even in the space in the Bible. I borrow heavily from the Bible. You look at it even in the space in the Bible. You will find women playing critical role in the ministry of our Lord Jesus Christ. The Akina Mary who were following Jesus up to his death. And then you ask, what was their role? When everyone else had disappeared, it was only women who remained. Even when Petro was denying Jesus, it is only women who followed and who saw everything. So even here, we need men. And we have seen, even where there are angles, men are fighting over leadership. Usually in our churches, you look at the church space, the voice of women brings sanity. And women, when they say, you people are fighting as we are going, women, men start reasoning. So even in wrangles in church, we need women. And voices of women have played a critical role in bringing women together, in bringing the church together. At the same time, they have been used. The men know their power. When they want actually to separate, when there is rebellion, they use women, because women, when they say they are moving, they are moving. So it is a very critical voice that cannot be missed. And I have found it even within me. There was a time our church was going through a very terrible rebellion. The only voice that could be heard, even in government offices, was my voice. I could go up to the Registrar Society, and the registrar would say, "Dini wanaume kaeni kando, wacha huyu mama aongee." And what I would say would be considered the whole truth. So it is an important.
This is an important voice. You, in the beginning, you said about the voices of women who bullied you out of church. Would you speak to the to those voices and what it means also for women's voices to other upcoming leaders?
It is true. And if you look at it from a historical point of view, this was actually out of ignorance. And why do I say ignorance? You see, culture, we are born in a culture, and culture actually took a center stage. And I believe, an intrapersonal belief inside women that that space is for men. So if you want to break and say it is women also belong here, that resistance was actually something that you could expect. But now over time, with continuous raising awareness and capacity building, and showing people this is what it is written in the Bible. So that you go even in the women conferences where they're just women, talk about the role of women in church building, in development, in deliverance. They are critical women who are actually, their role is serious. There is a day women were so much resistant, and I taught the book of Esther and how Esther was so strategic in delivering people of Israel. And that was like a turnaround time for women. And over time, even I look at these churches, as I told you, I also work with the National Council of Churches and the Organization of African Instituted Churches and bringing interfaith together. Over time now, people have started fronting issues of women, and also there are organizations, not faith-based, but the civil societies have also come with agendas of women, talking at the periphery, how women can be supported. So these voices are added together, and put these voices together, what they hear outside the church, what they see here inside the church, when there are synergies together, actually we have seen the deliverance.
Thank you. And I'm thinking also about how the numbers, the many numbers of women in churches, yet we are so many, but we don't have the power. What is the importance of having power as women within churches?
True, this has taken us time. And I can say in this space, the growth is slow. I can tell you the growth for sure. Though we are doing a lot, we are doing awareness, but I can tell you for sure the growth is slow. And I was confused last year around November when I went to Indonesia,
yes,
to look at what the Muslim women, that is the learned Muslim women, have done in the Indonesia and the movement they have formed, I was invited in a conference. We have brought the conference that brought it almost women, all women together. It was a big conference. And I learned so many things that women movement, if we don't go in this law, women can decide the politics of this country, Kenya. Women can decide because we have the numbers, though the growth is slow. So we are slowly borrowing that leaf from Indonesia and see how we can shape so that the country that we are in today, it is not about the masculinity of money and what the men have. It is, we will turn it into agenda issues. What is the agenda to be brought on the table? And we want to start conversations among women to decide who the leader will be. And I believe we are having one strategic meeting that we are wanting to bring almost religious elite women together and start this conversation, which will go up to the grassroots. And because what we are seeing in the country today, as women, we don't like it.
Yes.
The corruption in the country, we must say no. And we must give this country a meaningful growth in terms of employment. You cannot stand and say to so many graduates who are graduating, I tell them there is no employment.
Or I will look for a job for you in Japan.
Exactly, no. It must be in this country. And the people to change that notion is the women. And that is the agenda we are moving.
Oh, right? That's a powerful agenda.
Yes.
And maybe to also bring it within the faith system. Why is it, and even in the country, why do you think we are half of this country, yet our leadership is 80-90% male? What would you say is the attribution to that?
You see, I was looking at someone, somebody was doing some presentation or some research in the most popular organization that people still have faith in is the religious city that people still have faith in. So if you borrow a little bit in that, we can still change the narrative. And changing the narrative actually is the movement, I'm telling you.
Well,
once we decide that movement, we look at the cultural issues that are still pulling us back, that are still pulling women back, that women still need, that they can be learned, and turn this around, not with a negative perspective to bring the men counterpart down, but how do we lead concurrently and lead implementing and complementing one another so that we move as a force, but not one gender being left behind.
Wisdom is flowing.
Yes.
Wisdom is flowing. I would love to hear from you about what you would say the church loses or any institution loses when women are not in power. Rather, things that we lose when we don't have voices of women in places of influence.
One, what I would say, the corruption goes up. Women have a sense of saying, no, let us preserve this. But you have a place where it's just men. Be sure corruption would go. If you have women, if you look at the corruption institutions that we have even in this country, institutions that are men, women led and men led, then bring the corruption element, you will see that corruption in women has a lower percentage as compared to the corruption in men.
Okay.
Yes, and you look at it, sometimes women fear. So if you bring women, at least we will curb what is called corruption. Then number two, we will actually reduce conflict. Women, the way they were, men, the way they were socially constructed, they were constructed in a way that you cannot retreat. If you retreat, there is like...
You're not man
enough. You are not man enough. Mm. So they were constructed in a way of going. And we are seeing even some voices are coming out. Now, Raila should calm down. Raila should actually awache. But the man in him and in the men around him, and it's like you continue going. Even you see in the sitting president, the man in him, even if you point out this housing bill, in the 3% we cannot afford, the man in him, in Gawaji, he sees the sales, but the man in him is saying, no, just put it 1.5, but it can't be a no. So you see that man, the ego in men is so strong that you need to complement it and bring the women face so that they can all reason together and moderate then, one another. That is number one. I've talked about conflict, retreating, and then reducing corruption.
Correct.
Yes, that is a disease that is eating us.
Yes. So too... Within, in the past 10 years, I think you said you got ordained in 2009,
yes.
Right? The past 10, 12, 14 years, how many more women have come behind you and what have you seen as the impact of your ordination as the very first one? What has changed in your congregations, in your denomination?
I thank God for that. Yes, so many things have happened that where I sit, I am very happy and a proud woman.
Yes,
I used to go to national meetings. Believe me, if it was a meeting for bishops, I would sit alone. I used to be like only one person among even if it is 30 leaders. I would be number one against 29, one among 29. At some point, it intimidates you. You even don't have people to check. But over years, not only in my church,
yes,
but I've seen so many other churches now ordaining women, bringing women on board. And when the bishop, the first bishop for Anglican was ordained,
yes,
I was invited, like, you must come. It was an achievement for women, and we were celebrating that. And I was saying, my sister, you've come on board. Thank you so much. And now we go to other meetings. Now there are women priests we sit with. And like now in my church, now for women bishops in my church, I think right now we are around 9.
Oh, wow. Yes. That's very good.
It's very good.
That's very good. Know what I have realized? Or we did a baseline survey and found out that the number of women in the African instituted churches versus the very modern churches, the African instituted churches have more women leaders than this very quote-unquote progressing ones.
Because I was the first to build it.
Yes.
And I was coming from an African instituted churches perspective.
Yes.
And sometimes you go like in NCCK, this is National Council of Churches.
Yes.
Major composition are mainline churches. So if you introduce yourself, I'm Bishop Betty, they look at you. And they would come and ask me, do your church ordain bishop? Yes. And people would want to actually sit with you, look at your perspective, where are you coming from?
Yeah.
And because I went deeper in the Bible, I could challenge them with biblical, and they started thinking.
Yeah.
And that conversation has even made them ordain some women and come on the temple. So
you when you opened the door, the door remained open.
The door remained open. I'm so happy about that. The door remained open.
So, thank you for opening the doors for many of us and for the ones who are coming behind you. I'm sure it's not easy.
It's not easy. When a woman ascends in power, and this would be my message cutting across, your power and your position is not there to write a statement and demean men. No. If we go with that attitude, we will fall. We are supposed to raise equally. And even you as a woman in your position, help to bring men on board so that we don't have what we are seeing in the country where a girl child was actually left behind, and whoever came with a notion pushed the girl child so much until now we are realizing we left the boy child. And now people are going back. Mm. So even in leadership, as women have opened the door and they are going, it is not a matter of fighting and taking spaces for men. Mm. It is a matter of complementing one another and growing one another for the glory of the kingdom of God.
And the spaces are created. And so
these spaces are created.
As many as we are. They are not limited.
They are not limited, mm. Yeah.
Thank you for that. So what would you, for the, there's the mainline, I would say non-faith feminists and feminists of faith, and people who are, who we are, sometimes I find that maybe we might be fighting the same battle, but because of maybe beliefs and all of that, we are fighting from very far ends. What would you say we have to learn from each other?
Wow.
Or how can... what areas of collaboration do you see?
As long as it is touching on a human being, we need to check and say, what is your agenda? What is your objective?
Yes.
Check through the very objective. Is your objective talking about a feminine perspective? What exactly? Look at what is in it. You can actually partner.
Yeah.
I look at the development of religion. Look at how the Western people came into Africa. They just didn't come with the gospel. But they looked at the needs of the people. And they saw, like, school, people must go to school. And where a missionary settled, you will find these old and very good schools, like Maseno School. And they also brought the element of the hospital, where there's no boundary, whether you are of faith or not of faith, but you still benefit. So issues to do with faith are far much beyond just religion. And that is why it is good to check this organization. What is it talking about? Is there a need that we can address inside? If there is a need that is affecting humanity directly, then we partner. Issues like flood, they don't know religion.
Yeah.
They affect humanity. So people can unite.
Yes.
I can offer you a building like this. Somebody else brings food.
Yeah.
Somebody brings something. Then those are points of convergence.
Yes.
So it is about renewed. If it is about women's space in leadership, what is your CSO bringing on board?
Yeah.
How do we bring now the religious lens on it? And then we grow together.
And we grow together. Oh, so much to learn from. And collaboration is, I think, for me, the way we learn with each other. It's how we move ahead, then we collaborate and find places of convergence,
exactly,
as opposed to finding, because if you are looking for things that divide us, we will find them.
And that is not the best way to go. I'm giving you like an interreligious forum. Our slogan is coming together for a common purpose. Coming together for a common purpose. And I think that slogan can go a long way, even to other people. So if we are coming together, there is famine. You know, the famine cannot come for Christianity and leave other people. When famine hits Kisumu, it is all of us in Kisumu. Then the needs will converge us together more than dividing us. So what are the needs? What is the agenda?
Well, there's a lot to ruminate on. What would you say have been your joys as a leader so far? As an ordained leader, what joys have you experienced as an archbishop within your congregation?
What I enjoy most is this aspect of mediation.
Yeah.
mediation, and especially when the women are in forefront, it becomes so real. So real, because sometimes I get to interact with even the elite women in terms of mediation. And sometimes it comes so real until they forget their classroom work and talk about the real situation. We don't need conflict. Like what I saw in this region, people came out and mediation was like, this was after the announcement of the election. Ruto has won. The region was so bitter. But the message was, it's like we have lost it. Do we do double losing? So don't bar the roads. So the mediation brought it out that people could find a way of managing their loans other than just going on the street and burning the road. And that was the beauty of religion. And you walk around and people are saying around Kondele, Bishop Simama. And you could only tell a word, we have lost, but let us not lose more. Don't burn, nobody will come to spare to repair our roads. Bishop Tumiskia. That was moving. So mediation.
Maybe is one of your joys in this journey. What is your sorrow as a leader?
The fight. And growing into top leadership. And I can tell you there are times men fight you. Men fight you until you feel like you have been fought. And men have propagandas more than women. That is my revelation.
That's your revelation.
Yes. Good up there. They fight you, they make stories. But I want to thank God because when you lead to God, somehow God gives you a way. And God gives you some wisdom to conquer whatever they have put in front of you. Until they confess, they cannot say, "Hey, ileo tulipanga lakini umehepa."
Oh, wow. Now,
when you defeat them, that is one thing I fought with men. Men will tell you. Women will hide. But for men, if you defeat them, they'll turn you right away on your face.
This was our plan.
This was our plan. That's the reality.
So as we're winding up, what would your parting shot be for the church on giving power to women? And then for the young girls who are coming behind you, what would your encouragement be for them?
For me, I would not say women are given power. I didn't go that direction. But I will tell women to take up the space. Women must go to school, number one. Women should not just sit there that because somebody has opened up the door, now women must be given leadership. No, women should not be given leadership. Women should compete for leadership position with the right skills and with education. Once they have the right skills and right education, they will know how to articulate their issues and navigate through their problems properly. As opposed to when you are just put into position, sometimes you will be hit so hard because then you cannot navigate when a challenge comes. So we need women who can be put on power and still not being removed because they were not able to navigate through their challenges. And the only thing that can help us as women to navigate through our challenges, let us get right education, apply it rightly, and then have right skills. If it is about communication, let us know how to communicate instead of throwing words. Let us know how to communicate. And this would also go to the government. To the government, and I think from the word go, me, I've never agreed for these women, especially the women leaders. What do we call it? Counting women rep.
Yes.
That post for me, if this constitution can be changed, I will wrap it off so that we prepare women who have the power, the muscle, to identify what they want and to go for what they want. Not just to be created up with posts, then you are just these posts is to be occupied by women. Then it's leaving women to fight amongst themselves unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my take.
Mm.
Yeah, and for women in power, we must collaborate.
Mm.
Yes. We must collaborate and build the synergy and continue checking on ourselves.
Yes.
Who are we mentoring? Who is coming into our space so that we don't open up a space and then some few years we bounce back. So for the purposes of continuity, we need to actually synergize and mentor more younger women to actually come into leadership.
Oh, wow. Thank you. And the act of relationship building amongst women leaders, I think you're pointing out that is so important.
Mm-hmm.
That the higher you go, please invest in this relationship.
Exactly.
But also not just above,
mm-hmm.
At the same level,
exactly.
And also at the ones who are coming behind.
Absolutely.
So that then you are preparing them to take over from you.
Absolutely.
Then you
absolutely.
Yeah.
Because if you don't prepare people to come and sit on your seat, then you are dying. So you must prepare people who are coming to take over your seat. Then umeza vizuri. But if you are just going, you are the only lone range leader, you will die with your good things.
And then there's no continuity.
There's no continuity.
So all the hard work
goes in vain, yes. So we need to cultivate that so that we do a lot of mentorship programs.
Yeah. All right. And is there what would your parting shot be about all that we have spoken about? If there's something you feel like you would have wanted for us to listen the second or third time.
Yes. But I don't have much.
Yeah.
But what I would say, we need to dig more into feminism, women,
amen,
and the patriarchy plus culture.
Yeah.
We need actually to dig deep and have a greater understanding so that we don't end up spoiling our own country. Because if we buy so much into Western culture and think that is the order of the day, then we are losing good stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
So greater understanding in terms if we understand our culture, how diverse it is, and understand and bring the good things in it, then if we blend Kidogo with the Western, but bringing our culture forth, plus the understanding what is this feminism, what is this patriarchy, what are these muscles we are talking about, so that it is not about conflict, but it is about complementing.
Yes.
So people need to understand this, because people understand this like women are pushing men or men are pushing women. We don't need that understanding. It is a wrong perspective, but we need to get the right perspective. So with that, I would say your organization is doing well. You continue to hold women to a greater understanding so that we understand when we are talking about masculinity, it's not pushing. How strong am I to push other people? But it is embracing, collaborating, networking, and so that we push the agenda together.
Oh, and I have nothing else to add. You have really crystallized that, is that we are collaborating. What we are seeking for is we are seeking for a way. And feminism is about equality of all genders. It's equality for men, for female, for us to work together and to collaborate well. And our faith, and as we were talking before we started recording, is that God created us equal.
Yes.
Male and female, God created us equal.
Mm-hmm.
And so how are we, and we are created in God's image.
Amen.
So how does that play out in our systems, mm-hmm. in our roles, so that then when we silence one voice, what we actually mean is we are silencing God.
God, exactly.
So when we silence one voice in the church, we are silencing God.
Exactly.
We don't want to do that. So thank you so
thank you very much.
Thank you for honoring our invitation.
Thank you.
We are so honored to meet you to have this conversation.
I'm so humbled.
All right.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so very much to all of us for this conversation. Please tune in for our next conversation on this Faith, Freedom, and Feminism series. Asante Nisan.
Asante.